uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Gentlemen, welcome to another live edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thanks for being with us here tonight for yet another late night Moonbat edition of the broadcast. Tuesday into Wednesday now, so thanks so much for being with us. We're going to be getting into some various news and information for you here tonight. We have some pretty interesting stories to talk about news-wise tonight without having to placate to whatever the current media fiasco is in the news. I've been really proud of being able to do that here, to get into some different topics of discussion, different news, without having to always play into whatever the current media hype is surrounding. So we'll definitely be doing more of that here tonight. My website where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. That's www.theglobalreality.com. If you'd like to send in emails to me anytime, stuff for me to read on here. I wonder sometimes, though, I get emails from people, and I wonder if they know that I read these on air, and I wonder if sometimes they know that I respond to them. I'm responding to them on the show, because I don't always have time to respond to everybody and write, type back to them, but sometimes I answer these questions on the show, so I guess just leave it at that and see what happens. But nonetheless, if you want to send an email into the broadcast tonight, anything you'd like to get up on the air, hear me talk about here, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. It's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. You can send in your emails there. I'll do my best to get into all those for you here tonight on the broadcast. Very interesting that we've had a lot of an uptick of listenership and an uptick of hits on our videos and stuff. Not an uptick in support, but we barely scraped by and got on the air tonight. Thank you to that person who helped get us over the edge to pay the bill and get on the air tonight. But interesting though, I've been getting emails from for instance the email we had last night from a listener and a researcher. Who was talking about, he's come to a lot of the same conclusions I have and stuff, and I've kind of filled in the blanks for him. That's what's awesome. But I also got an email here, and we'll just start out. I only have a couple of emails tonight, just two so far, but if you want to get one in during the broadcast, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. We're also going to read from Zechariah Sitchin's Lost Book of Enki for you here tonight, as well. Didn't do that last night. Mondays are generally full of news and commentary. Everything builds up after the weekend, so Mondays are generally not a very good day for reading. I actually got an email from a gentleman who has been a guest on Red Ice Radio himself, and I've actually played his broadcast here, by a guy by the name of Court Lindahl, sent me an email, and very interesting information he sent me, and I've played his rebroadcast of his Red Ice show here on the network before. He gets into stuff like geomancy and various locations of artifacts and different things happen and how they all point to various interesting interlocking places. But I'd like to read this for you now. It says, Josh, I enjoyed your recent interview on Red Ice Radio. I have also been on Red Ice Radio, and I am currently have recently discovered information concerning the Georgia Guidestones. They were placed in an alignment of Thomas Jefferson architecture and line up with the axes he created in the form of his octagonal estate, Poplar Forest, near Lynchburg, Virginia. I've also completed a video about the architecture of I.M. Pei in Dallas, as well as the Trammell Crowe building, which I promise will blow your mind if you watch it. I will attach links to both these videos for you. I also have a blog about geomancy called survivalcell.blogspot.com. I especially enjoyed what you were saying on Red Ice Radio about the hidden cabal of people that control alternative media. I've run headlong into this obstacle several times. They absolutely do not want to hear what I am saying. I am the only person in the history of the world to note that the Windrose markers in the obelisk at St. Peter's are an axis that points to places important to the Catholic faith. I mean, precisely right to important sites that are thousands of miles away, including the Dome of the Rock. I'm always available to speak to you. I have the Survival Cell channel on YouTube. Gracias for all the great work that you have done, Court Lindahl. I've got to get that guy on, man. I hadn't got a chance to watch all these videos yet. I'll link to one of them in the chat room. That should be able to point you in the direction of being able to find his YouTube channel. But I don't know if he's listening, if he listens to the show or not, but I'm definitely going to send him an email back and try to get him on. It sounds like he's got some interesting information, and watch a little bit of one of his videos, and there was some pretty awesome stuff in there. But the one interesting thing about it for me is that he's finding all these things that point to, you know, again, the priest class, the custodians, the overlords. He's finding all these things that point in the direction of that, and also which, you know, would indicate high technology to be able to get those so precise over great distances before that kind of travel was possible. And those kind of, you know, tools and computers and that kind of stuff. But also with the idea that, you know, this is why certain people in the Truth Movement, Patriot Movement won't cover this stuff, because, you know, they're aware that it points right back to their masters and the whole other end of the conversation that they won't allow to be brought up. That's really all of us are the, you know, it's the fucked up thing is, and I've talked about this many times, you know, you always used to hear from those people like Alex Jones and others, do your own research, do your own research. See, then they poison the well for people like us that really mean it when we say it. But that's not the point. What happened with me is, you know, I listened to that and I did do my own research, and my own research led me to the fact that there's a whole bunch of more information out there that these guys aren't talking about. And then as soon as, you know, that's what your research brings you to. Oh, well, you're a Fed or you're an outsider or whatever else. And what's funny is that now that since I've done that Red Eyes show, it's reached so many people that there are people like Court Lindahl here, apparently, that have been researchers who have been going on shows and putting out stuff, but have, you know, come across this moratorium on certain types of information, and up to this point have not had an explanation for why that is. And that's why I've always told people this Council for National Policy information, all this stuff with the Jesuits and the priest class, this information is way more important than any of us even know right now at this point in time. Because uncovering it just, and everybody that researches it and comes across it just goes, oh man, yeah, that's the missing link. That's the missing piece. That's what they haven't been telling us. Just volumes and volumes of history that have been left out of both mainstream and alternative media coverage of history. Unbelievable stuff. I mean, it's the ones that don't talk about the Jesuits and the priest class and that kind of stuff, those are the ones you got to be wary of, folks. Period, bottom line. So it's very inspiring there to get that email from a fellow researcher. Thank you so much again. Very inspiring. All these emails we've been getting in lately. And our listenership, everything's, man, if our monetary support could ever catch up with our listenership, boy, we'd be knocking them out of the fucking park every week. We'd be cranking out stuff left and right. That's the thing. You know, if I had an unlimited fucking, resource well, I'd be cranking out films and mini films and all kinds of shit, all the time. And as it stands now, when you get very little in, you operate on that little bit for a while, and you get a bunch done, you get to a point, and then you're out of money, and then you're done. You know, you pretty much come to a standstill for a period of time until you get a little more boost again after, you know, a month or two, and you get going again. It's kind of stop and start, you know. Here's a interesting email from someone named Leo. He says, Nibiru is Venus. If you check out James McManey, you will see that Venus is the dragon spoken about in the Lost Book of Enki. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Venus is so hot because it is a comet that has recently entered our solar system, and his research shows that the Mayan calendar is a focus on Venus, not the Earth. His website is www.jmcanneyscience.com. When Venus came by, it ripped the water off Mars and had electrical interaction, and large thunderbolts pounded Mars. This guy, James McCanney, has a physics degree from Cornell and has a whole electric universe construct. Love your show. Peace, Leo. Well, that's interesting stuff. I'll definitely check that out. And I'm really glad that there are people who are trying to look at these things in different ways. You know, I don't know if there's anything to this, what he's saying here about, you know, the Mayan calendar focusing on Venus, not Earth, and Venus being Nibiru. I don't know anything about that because this is the first I've heard of it. I'm not saying it's not true, but I'll definitely look into this guy's work and give it a go and see what I think about it. But the point of the matter is that I'm glad there are people even doing that. You know what I mean? Thinking outside of the box a little bit. Well, you know, what if it is? You know, blah, blah, blah. If there's evidence to support it, look into it. I'm glad that people are doing that rather than staying stagnant and just accepting what, you know, Zachariah Sitchin tells you about it, or, you know, some truther, or, you know, some radio host or something, or, you know, some clown on Ancient Aliens or something. You know, that's really what we've been given up to this time. And so I'm glad to see that other people are actually coming in with new schools of thought and looking at things different way. I think the key to all this stuff lies in these Sumerian cylinder seals and texts, and that's why there's been such a... I mean, these guys are the modern-day crusaders, man. I mean, this is, you know, this is religious, spiritual, and extraterrestrial all wrapped into one. It's all one thing. There's no separation between any of that. And the sooner you understand that and accept that, the quicker you're going to be able to understand some of the more deeper levels of this quote-unquote New World Order Illuminati stuff. But it's, you know, you're going to have to get over the separation that these constructs create in your mind by, well, it just comes from programming and schooling and public schooling and all that stuff. We build these little constructs and little files of things. You know, it's just all about separation. You know, history class over here, science class over here, never the two shall meet, you know. But that's really not the case. It's all inclusive. It all connects together. There is no separation. And as in the microcosm, so in the macrocosm. You know, as above, so below. There you go. It all happens. Let's see what we have here. No more emails tonight, so if you want to get some in, globalrealityshow@gmail.com, so you can send those over to. Oh, man, we've got some crazy fucking news tonight. I'm sorry, there's no other way I can say it. Crazy fucking news tonight. I got to go through here real quick and just see where I want to start. I mean, some of these are just, my goodness. You know, you see people, you see some of these websites like Alex Jones websites and different ones like them, both alternative media and mainstream media, and they just sensationalize everything. They sensationalize the names of the articles and the news and everything else, and I always had a real problem with that because it just seemed to me no better than what the mainstream media does, but some of these news titles tonight are just, you know, these aren't my titles. These are straight news, mainstream news titles. They sound sensational. I mean, they really are sensational. Like I said, I don't even know where to start. I think this is a good place to start. Good Lord!
It's been too long, Josh, since I've been able to come on your show. Yes. It's Pastor Hagee, John Hagee down here in San Antonio, Texas, supporting the Jews in everything they do and trying to tell people about the Lord.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say. Hagee, You had a very interesting thing today that I saw here. I've got it on my stack. I guess I'll just go ahead and cover this. Do you know what article I'm talking about?
Yeah, Josh, I know what you're talking about. I know what you're going to say right now, but I just hear me out on this. I mean,
there's no way you can talk your way out of this, dude. This is a rather strange article.
Well, you know, I mean, come on, let me be the Jew.
I know what you're going to say. All Jews this now. According to Pastor John Hagee, the U.S. military is no longer able to win wars because of Satan worship and increasing paganism in America. So all of you hippie pagan anti-war types out there, it's your goddamn fault that we can't win any fucking wars.
Well, Josh, I couldn't agree with you more.
Actually, I was was being facetious there. No, I. But that, apparently, I guess that's what they're saying here. Hippie pagans, Satan worshipers are the reason America can't win a war. You can't win a war because, as Bill Hicks said, it's not a war. War is when you got two people fighting against each other. This is invasion, genocide, bloodshed. This is the new Crusades. These guys are crusaders, man. And that's at the deepest levels. That's why you find these crusaders attached to the truth movement, the patriot movement. You find their connections right there. Can you honestly, will you honestly believe any researcher who for a minute is worth their weight in salt that claims that they've researched and know all there is to know about this stuff, but yet can still claim to be a member of one of these known, phony, controlled, created religions that's been created by the hierarchy? I mean, just that from day one. Before I knew anything else, when I heard people like Alex, I'm a Christian. Oh, yeah. Like, buddy, obviously you haven't done your research, man. You're obviously not as informed as you think you are or say you are if you haven't found the source of it. At that time, you know, I didn't know about the CMP and stuff yet, so my answer didn't come apparent until then. This is just unbelievable. Increased Satan worship and paganism in America is what's caused us to not be able to win wars. Not the fact that these wars are unwinnable, not the fact that they're not wars, not the fact that this is in bloodshed and blood sacrifice and ritualistic genocide in the name of God and the Jews and everything else, like fucking Hagee says. You know, like Dave Mustaine says in Holy Wars, killing for religion, something I can't understand. Yeah, I mean, who can't understand that? Killing for religion. That makes a whole lot of sense. Perry has, Rick Perry's response, Perry had a blah, 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 whatever. Hagee, you're a fucking Zionist piece of shit, CMP cocksucker.
Suck Satan's cock, Hagee. I'll be waiting for you down here, motherfucker. You know you got a place in hell, bitch. Oh, yeah, you're my bitch, Hagee. I'm waiting on that ass. The fire's getting hot, baby. Yeah.
I mean, the guy preaches on a red carpet. That should have been your first fucking, should have been your first fucking clue right there. Goodness. Let's see what else we have. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. This stuff's just out of control. All these news stories now are insane. CERN gags physicists in cosmic ray experiment. What do these results mean? We're not allowed to tell you. Apparently, some of the stuff I was talking about a few months ago about, you know, the different NASA craft that went up to monitor radiation in the atmosphere and stuff like that, these chemtrail monitoring things. And I said, you know, one of them went down. I said, you watch, the second one won't make it up either. And it didn't. This has something to do with weather modification, weather control, climate shield. But they're being very tight-lipped about it. But if you've researched this, it's not going to be hard for you to draw a conclusion of what's going on here. The chief of the world's leading physics lab at CERN in Geneva has prohibited scientists from drawing conclusions from a major experiment. Oh, and they call this the cloud experiment. Yeah, that's cute, guys. I mean, this is obviously chemtrail science going on here. And they actually use the acronym CLOUD. Yeah, cute. Cosmic's leaving outdoor droplets. So they're saying that cosmic rays are leaving or causing water droplets or causing cloud cover, not chemtrails or shit they're spraying here. Yet another attempt to cover up the chemtrail operation that's been ongoing. Cosmic's leaving outdoor droplets experiment examines the role that energetic particles from deep space play in cloud formation. Cloud uses CERN's proton synchrotron to examine nucleation. CERN Director General Rolf Dieter Hauer told Welt Online that scientists should refrain from drawing conclusions from the latest experiment. I've asked the colleagues to present the results clearly, but not to interpret them, reports veteran science editor Nigel Calder on his blog. Why? Because Hauer says that would go immediately into the highly political arena of the climate change debate. One has to make clear that cosmic radiation is only one of many parameters. The unusual gagging order could have been issued because the results of cloud are really, really boring muses. Or it could be that the experiment invited a politically unacceptable hypothesis on climate. No, it's because the information presented there exposes this whole ongoing operation that we are creating this greenhouse effect and creating the heating of the climate through spraying of chemtrails, which then traps the heat down at the ground level and causes things like the polar ice caps to melt. You know how it used to be the greenhouse effect, and they never talk about it anymore? That's because they started creating it. The cloud experiment builds on earlier experiments by Danish physicist Henrik Svendsmark, who demonstrated that cosmic rays provide a seed for clouds. Tiny changes in the Earth's cloud cover could account for variations in temperature of several degrees. The amount of ultrafine condensation nuclei material depends on the quantity of the background drizzle of rays, which varies depending on the strength of the sun's magnetic field and the strength of the Earth's magnetic field. But how much? Speaking at a private event by LREG earlier this year, Svendsmark, who has nothing to do with cloud, wouldn't be drawn. He said he thought that it was one of four significant factors. Man-made factors, volcanoes, a regime shift in the mid-70s, and cosmic rays. So again, they've found something here, but again, the implications of that, of what it means, they don't want to come out and talk about it. So look for tons of disinfo to be flying around on this topic for sure. Oh, I haven't read this article yet. This could be total bullshit, but this is weird. This is just what we need. We've got this. The world's going to hell in a handbasket, and Bill Gates has nothing better to do than be a eugenicist and wipe out, you know, third world populations across the world and try to invent some high tech toilet seat. I mean, my God, is that what we're doing? We're not trying to come up with a cancer cure, which we know they already have. We're not trying to come up with, you know, an end to world hunger, which we know we could do if it wasn't for these cocksuckers like Gates and Warren Buffett, you know, paying for billions of dollars for GMO food to be grown in Mexico, getting, you know, huge subsidies, huge tax cuts. Oh, look at us. We're philanthropists. You know, we spend $1 billion growing food for Africa in Mexico. Aren't we the best? Yeah, they don't tell you that's GMO food, admittedly, that they're sending over there. And what's it do? It changes your DNA. It's a biological weapon. These philanthropists that are posing as, you know, the saviors feeding the hungry are getting billions of dollars in subsidies and tax cuts and everything else, while at the same time providing a biological weapon for third world countries to wipe out their populations. And this guy has nothing better to do than trying to invent some new toilet seat. What, is it going to give you AIDS when you sit on it, Bill? The man who reinvented computers and made PCs a household item in most wealthy nations, Microsoft tycoon turned philanthropist Bill Gates, is now focusing his attention on recasting the toilet. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is pledging millions of dollars in grants to reinvent the toilet. Again, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, there you go. I was joking around about that. You know, the toilet seat you sit down on, it automatically gives you AIDS. Well, my God, if they're behind it, it probably does. You can't trust those eugenics fuck nuts as far as you can throw them. Beware of the fucking Bill and Melinda Gates toilet seat. That's all I'm saying. It's a fucking, you know, black plague when you go to drop a deuce. Wouldn't surprise me. They are pledging millions of dollars in grants to reinvent the toilet. Its director of water sanitation and hygiene programs calling it a huge issue for Africa. The aim is to boost health in developing countries by giving the 2.6 billion people who don't have access to a WC a hygienic, safe place to go to the toilet. So it goes on and on, but never talks about what this toilet actually is envisioned to do. It just says we're going to put all this money into create a new toilet, but they don't say what the new toilet is going to do and what benefit it's going to have over a conventional toilet or pooping in a hole and burying it yourself or something. I mean, who gives a fuck? What a retarded story. Oh, did you guys hear about this? Debt stalemate invokes language of Armageddon. Yeah, now the Obama administration has resulted in using, oh, well, this is going to be financial Armageddon. Yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you something too, bucko. Bruce Willis is not going to be able to come with Aerosmith and save your sweet ass when this gets ready to go down on August 3rd. You hear me? Goodness gracious, my golly goodness, I need a sandwich. It's tough. Tough being the president. With time quickly running out to raise the debt ceiling, the Obama administration is turning to biblical rhetoric.
Suck Satan's cock.
To underscore the disastrous consequences if the United States defaults. For weeks, Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner and other administration officials have been warning of an economic catastrophe if the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling, which caps the amount Washington can borrow, is not raised by August 2nd. Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines catastrophe as a momentous, tragic event ranging from the extreme misfortune to utter overthrow or ruin. Well, that's an accurate description. If we're going to have a catastrophe, it's going to be an overthrow for sure. I mean, that's what every big regime change is always a coup d'etat. There was a coup d'etat, an overthrow of power, then an installation of a new government. And we may very well say, I think that's why the Red Dawn movie, the new remake where the Chinese Reds come down, I think that's why they hadn't put that movie out yet. Maybe what's going to happen, I don't know. That definition appears to chime with the view of most economists who agree that a U.S. default on the obligations would plunge the United States into a new recession and send shockwaves through international financial markets. In interviews, speeches, and news conferences, administration officials have used the word again and again, but instead of scaring Republicans into action and breaking deadlock debt talks, it has had the opposite effect. Republican lawmakers accuse the Obama administration of scaremongering. Many refuse to budge from their firm belief that a default will not happen. Well, right, because these cocksuckers are getting, you know, oh, no, it won't happen. We won't default. Burp, 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 you know. I just like the fact that they're pumping, you know, that terminology around left and right every chance they get now. CIA's DARPA working on human brain mimicking technology. Company that built the first internet node has been hired for this project. The company which built the first ever internet nodes back in the 1960s and which gave the world the at symbol in email, among other things, has been hired by the U.S. intelligence community to work on technology which could mimic the brain's ability to make sense of large amounts of haphazard partial information. Back in the late 1960s, Boston-based BBN Technologies was hired by the U.S. Military Advanced Research Projects Agency, later renamed DARPA, to develop the first nodes of the ARPANET, which later became the internet we all know and love. DARPA's various successes for the military over the last decade since have inspired the CIA and allied U.S. intelligence agencies to start up their own version of the famous bureau dubbed the Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Agency, or IARPA. Now, BBN these days, owned by U.S. arms giant Raytheon, says it has won a $3 million deal from IARPA to explore how the brain processes massive amounts of fragmented data. The funding comes from IARPA's backronym-tastic Integrated Cognitive Neuroscience Architectures for Understanding Sense-Making Program, or ICARUS. And Icarus, again, was the son of Vulcan. That's what these guys in the high, you know, in the office administration, they always call themselves the Vulcans. Brain mimicking tech. Yeah, this is for these massive supercomputer systems. They want to know how the brain is working so they can process information that fast and take over for the carbon-based life forms. I mean, done deal. Doesn't get any more in your face than that. Officer says Army slimed him for refusing to conduct an illegal psyops on a congressman. Interesting story here. The Army refuses to release information on its investigation into whether a three-star general conducted psychological operations on members of Congress during their visits to Afghanistan, according to the two Army information operations officers at the center of the controversy. Michael Holmes, the officer who says he refused orders to conduct psyops, which is psychological operations, on American officials. They got these guys brainwashing the fucking congressman when they come over. I mean, no wonder they, you know, shit's gone to hell in a handbasket. And Laura Levine filed a federal Freedom of Information complaint saying the Army and the U.S. Army Central Command refused to release the records. Holmes and Levine says the Army investigation also covered allegations of whistleblower retaliation conducted against the plaintiffs for challenging unlawful orders. Rolling Stone magazine published an article in February this year alleging that the U.S. Army illegally ordered a team of soldiers specializing in psychological operations to manipulate visiting American senators into providing more troops and funding for the war. And when an officer tried to stop the operation, he was railroaded by military investigators, according to the complaint. And, this is all starting to come out now. People are starting to realize more and more psychological operations and, you know, and this backs. I mean, these guys who are executing orders for the military are not taking their orders from the highest levels of the United States government. That's the facade. That's the lie. That's the scapegoat. That's the Oswald. That's the patsy. The United States government is the patsy, the bad guy, the fall guy for the much larger global cabal. They've had fall guys and patsies throughout history, throughout various areas of the world. We are the current one. They are setting us up to be the blame for everything so they can bring the American way of life to an end and assume total control. This is the big final play here. I'll drop that one for you in the chat room as well. Let's see what else we have here tonight. Oh, remember last week we were talking about this pharmaceutical executive who had his girlfriend was found dead hanging from the balcony. I don't know what's going on with this man. This is very odd. Maybe this is a haunting. Maybe he's got a fucking this mansion's haunted. I don't know. The 6-year-old son of a pharmaceutical executive died Sunday after a fall at the historic Spreckles Mansion. His father's girlfriend's body was found hanging Wednesday from a balcony at the home. I mean, that's... So Wednesday, the girlfriend's hanging from the balcony, and just a couple of days later, his 6-year-old son takes a fall and dies. Something fucking weird is going on there, that's for sure. Deadly New Zealand earthquake uncovers Israeli spy ring. Amazing the things an earthquake will turn up sometimes, isn't it? A New Zealand newspaper group is reporting that the deadly February earthquake in Christchurch unearthed a suspected Israeli spy ring. 3 Israelis died in the quake that killed 181 people. Other Israelis escaped the quake. The Fairfax newspaper group, which didn't state how it obtained the information, said that one of the Israelis who died was carrying at least 5 passports. Fairfax said New Zealand Prime Minister John Key took 4 calls from Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu following the quake, and that an unaccredited Israeli search and rescue squad searching a cordoned area in Christchurch was stopped by New Zealand officials. Key, who was traveling in California, told media Wednesday that it wasn't in the national interest to comment about the report. Yeah. And we found some Mossad agents in spying in New Zealand, but we're not going to talk about that or bring it up. Wouldn't be appropriate, right? Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards has shot down a U.S. spy drone, which is flying over the central Iranian province of Qom and spying on their nuclear stuff. Yeah, they're ramping up this Iran stuff again. Again, more phony, distractionary stuff for the media. No reason to really get into much of that. But tons of this stuff, you know, spies and Mossad agents running around. Listen to this. Book says Hollywood producer was Mossad agent. How long have I been telling you that? You know, music industry, movie industry, there are Mossad agents and spooks and stuff. I mean, these guys are one and the same. George Clooney, CIA, running the, you know, Ghana operation. Could one of Hollywood's greatest Israeli producers have been a Mossad agent? In a new biography called Confidential, the life and secret agent turned Hollywood tycoon Arnon Mishon, authors Mir Doran and Joseph Gelman claim that the producer took part in secret Mossad operations. According to the book, Mishon supervised accounts and financed the essential needs of Israeli intelligence operations outside the country. Those essential needs include purchasing components for Israeli's nuclear arsenal. Gelman recalls a phone call with Mishlon during the Gelman and asked the producer, should I be worried? The New York Times had written that Gelman told Mishon that there were fears that appearance-wise, people would think Mishon received major perks from Israel for his cooperation. Gelman claims that Mishon's response was, I did it for my country. The money didn't go into my pockets. Mishon, 66, is considered one of Hollywood's greatest producers. His cinematic productions include Israeli movie Dinzanov 99, Pretty Woman, and The Devil's Advocate, and his fortune is an estimated $4 billion. So yet again, another example of things that we've already know. These guys are, you know, these Mossad agents and spooks, and they're at the highest levels of everything. People say, well, come on, this is propaganda of these Hollywood movies. That's because the intelligence agencies and the movie companies and all this stuff, they're seamlessly interlocked in together now. There's no separation. You got to get over this separation of this stuff in your head. Quit thinking that the music industry and religion and secret societies and all this stuff are all separated. They're all controlled by the same network of individuals. You guys hear about this strange meditation video game that Deepak Chopra's coming out with? I don't know, man. This seems weird to me. We know that video games take your mind down into theta wave state, which leaves you wide open, very, very susceptible to mind control, very susceptible to any kind of control. I don't know. The idea of it just sounds weird, but I'll read the article. This is from the Associated Press. At the end of a long day, many gamers zone out by competing in online death matches, or they check out by escaping to virtual realms. Spiritual leader Deepak Chopra is hoping gamers will instead choose to chill out with Leela, his ambitious new effort to combine gaming and meditation. I personally believe that you can accelerate neural development and biological evolution through video games, said Chopra. Unfortunately, that's not what we're doing right now. What we're doing is creating addictions to violence, adrenaline, and mindlessness rather than mindfulness. But my thing is well, you know, I'm aware of anything that says, you know, you're going to have technology to meditate or meditation and gaming. I mean, that's just, you never the two shall meet. I mean, those should be very, you know, gaming is great. Meditation is great. But meditation is about clearing your mind of everything. Everything. And working for years and years and years to clear your mind of everything so you become still so that you're not distracted. And just, you know, the video game totally defeats the purpose of meditation. It's just, I don't know. Maybe some people get into it. Deepak Chopra's Leela from THQ Incorporated will use the Xbox 360 console's controller-free camera kinetic system to detect users' bodies and guide them through meditation exercises. Seven different interactive exercises based on the seven chakras, the points along the body that Chopra says serve as energy centers, task players with moving their bodies to control graphics on screen set to a soothing soundtrack. The mini games increase in difficulty, but Leela places no importance on a final score, even finishing the exercise. Who knows? I mean, it's very strange to me, but knowing video gamers and what video gamers are into, I have a feeling that the Deepak Chopra meditation game is probably going to rank up there with the E.T. video game for Atari 2600. Probably going to be right up there with that. Oh, man. Nessie. Captured on film. Is this Alaska's own Loch Ness monster? You guys notice there's like monsters showing up everywhere now? We had the lizard man in South Carolina. Apparently they've got a Nessie up there in Alaska, boy. A large creature 20 to 30 feet long with humps on its back moves menacingly through the waters of the Alaskan Bay. Filmed by a local fisherman in 2009, the unidentified creature has, of course, already drawn comparisons to Scotland's infamous Loch Ness Monster. Scientists, however, believe that the Alaskan creature could be a Cardibosaurus, a type of sea serpent that got its name from the Cadboro Bay in British Columbia and is said to roam the North Pacific. But, I mean, you know, two things, though. Number one, there are probably billions of species on this planet that we've never discovered, don't even know about. Number two, we don't know if any of this stuff is, as a, you know, coming as a result of genetic manipulation or, you know, any of this toxic waste or any of this other stuff that they've been dumping. I mean, remember, the government admitted that they were dumping fucking nerve gas into the Atlantic Ocean a few years ago. There's no telling. I mean, people talk about chupacabras and lizard people. I mean, my God, but the stuff that we pumped into the environment, there's no telling what's been bred out there. Those crazy rod things that people see. Brooklyn supermarket resorting to olfactory mind control. A chain of supermarkets in Brooklyn and Staten Island has started piping in food scents to their stores in an effort to subliminally encourage customers to buy stuff. Scents you might smell in net cost market include Lent chocolate. Lent chocolate? That doesn't sound appealing. L-I-N-D-T chocolate. Okay. Smoky bacon and rosemary focaccia. Well, I mean, how do you artificially create the smell of smoky bacon? And why is that appealing? I'm going to walk into this market. I smell smoky bacon. I got to have me some of that right now. Smoky bacon. A shopper in Sheepshead Bay told the Post, "It made me really hungry all of a sudden." Well, yeah, that's the idea. So they admit that they're using mind control by piping in smells and getting people to buy products. Oh, my goodness gracious. Out of control. Let me see what else we have here. Why Americans can't afford to eat healthy. The real reason Big Macs are cheaper than more nutritious alternatives is government subsidies. The easiest way to explain Gallup's discovery that millions of Americans are eating fewer fruits and vegetables than they ate last year is simply to crack a snarky joke about the whole foods really being whole paycheck. Rooted in the old limousine liberal iconography, the quip conjures the notion that only Birkenstock-wearing trust funders can afford to eat right in tough times. It seems a tidy explanation for a disturbing trend implying that healthy food is inherently more expensive and thus can only be for wealthy endive elitists when the economy falters. That's the haves and the have-nots, neo-feudalism. It's exactly what Zbigniew Brzezinski talked about in his book, Between Two Ages, The Rise of the Technotronic Era. He explains that thoroughly. And, of course, he was the campaign advisor for who? You guessed it. But the talking point's carefully crafted mix of faux populism An oversimplification seems a bit facile if the Gibb explanation seems almost too perfectly sculpted for your local right-wing radio blowhard. That's because its dishonesty omits the most important part of the story. The part about how healthy food could easily be more affordable for everyone right now, if not for those ultimate elitists, agribusiness CEOs, their lobbyists, and the politicians they own. Hear, hear to that. Can't argue with that one. As with most issues in this new Gilded Age, the tale of the American diet is a story of the worst form of corporatism, the kind whereby the government uses public money to protect private profit. In this chapter of that largely tragic comedy, lawmakers whose campaigns are underwritten by agribusiness have used billions of taxpayer dollars to subsidize those agribusinesses' specific commodities, corn, soybeans, wheat, etc., that are key ingredients of unhealthy food. Not surprisingly, the subsidies have manufactured a price inequality that helps junk food undersell nutritious but unsubsidized foods like fruits and vegetables. The end result is that recession-battered consumers are increasingly forced by economic circumstances to choose the lower-priced junk food that their taxes support. Corn, which is processed into the junk food staple corn syrup and which feeds the livestock that produce meat, exemplifies the scheme. Over the past decade, the federal government has poured more than $50 billion into the corn industry, keeping prices for the crop artificially low. That's why McDonald's can sell you a Big Mac, fries, and a Coke for around $5, a bargain. Yes, it is a bargain, but one created by deliberate government policy that serves the corn industry titans, not by any genetic advantage that makes corn derivatives automatically more affordable for the budget-strapped commoner. The aggregate effect of such market manipulation across the agriculture industry, notes Time Magazine, is that a dollar can buy 1,200 calories of potato chips or 875 calories of soda, but just 250 calories of vegetables or 170 calories of fresh fruit is a marked difference. So while it may be amusing to use Americans' worsening recession-era diet as another excuse to promote cultural stereotypes, the nutrition crisis costing us billions in unnecessary healthcare costs is more about public policy and special interest than it is about snobs or affluent taste. Well, that's part of neo-feudalism. That's why they created this health industry. That's why with the economic thing, this, they get everybody, you know, eating lesser quality things. They're looking at what they're going to get from you 20, 30, 40 years down the road, where they can milk you dry and milk money dry and charge billions of dollars on, nationalized healthcare and get taxpayers to pay for us to be in this endless medical industrial complex. The medical industrial complex is as big of a threat to humanity in the 21st century as the military industrial complex was in the 20th century. And you can quote me on that. All right. Well, we're going to drop it there for now. Take a break, come back, and we'll see if we have any more news to get into tonight, and then we'll get into reading from the Lost Book of Enki for you here on the show tonight. Glad you could all stay up late with us tonight, folks. This is The Global Reality for you right here on the Global Reality Radio Network with me, your host, Josh Reeves. Stay with us. Got to get a tune loaded up. I didn't have any tunes ready tonight. We'll be right back.
Arise from out of the primordial waters of chaos as Amun-Ra, the sun god, emerged from the lotus flower. I invoke the ancient Egyptian deity Shu, while inheriting the vibrational force of Tefnut in the hermetic form of Gid. We manifest as the nine and ad, embrace the face of the Sphinx and behold a mystic triad of Ad-Turi. Three of us initiated from the majestic temple of Karnak, where the opening of the mouth ceremony is performed. With the Uraeus, the crown of the sacred cobras will be placed upon my forehead. In the valley of the kings, I walk as Inhotep, descendant of Ramses the second. I cast the incantation, the curse of King Tut, and watch the scattered beetles eat away at your flesh. So witness the splendor of Luxor as I summon the Nateru Zuzor while performing the great oracle of Tahuti. I call forth Rahuru, Kahuti, and the field of offering will be drank from the blood of deceased battles. Within the center face of the great pyramids of Giza, I possess the spirit of my ancient ancestors, Osiris. Through the perception of my iris, I perceive Horus as the apparition of Isis. My soul wasn't placed inside a solid gold sarcophagus, and then imprinted upon my chest was the arm, the key to the afterlife, where my soul will seek eternal life.
For over 2,000 years, ancient Egyptians believed that their dead set sail on a sacred journey to a wondrous afterlife.
Learn hieroglyphics, not just pictures, but a celestial linguistic not related to a specific terrestrial distance. Ancient Egyptian civilization came from Mars. All people equal to that of Elijah, to guide you from the wilderness, to make the pilgrimage to the mountain of Sinai, where the spine eye watches as the prophets speak Nawapic in the temple of Amun-Ra. Nine astronomers graph the formula for the Southern Cross. All rise from the dark side with our laws. Orchids provide the planet with organic life, holding a skull of Iblis in the background with Egypt's sun eclipse. Poltergeist close to Christ, but solid with pilot question me. Deep on the left of me, dagger through my chest place, but I escape. Dressed like a gardener in the upper room, 10 peasants, 2 not present. Mary Magdalene, sprinkle it all on my abdomen. Fill my wounds, empty tomb, presume I was on Barnabas. Drop your fishing rod, bait the weak who hate to speak of love. Came to my own, but they received me not when my CD dropped. They came Sanhedrin baptized in the Jordan, recording John's last sermon. His accent was sort of German. Told the slave driver, the table's turning on the grave robber. Hey Nicodemus, drop your idolatry and follow me. Drop your net, catch the catfish while he backflip. Don't hold him captive, drop him. When the tide changed, that I was rendered. I have not ascended yet, I returned to Jerusalem. Walking with Methuselah, the arrival of Shiloh. Passing up the scepter, healing up the lepers. I came to the lost sheep to toss beats for them the right tool. Primitive but not limited to 16 balls in a sun cycle. Michael transformed to Yannon from the lagoon in the galaxy phrase Ilyun. Soon as June 26th, the mummy knits a new grave, a paved in jade, a curse for those who impose.
Egyptian religion warns all who dare defile the tomb of mighty Pharaoh. He who shall injure my tomb, the sun god shall punish him.
Through the iris of Osiris, I walk amongst the fires, relentless to the ancient land of Memphis, carrying the sacred capstone on 40 arms. I'm greeted by a group of master masons, silk adorned, who wore the charms of Horus, the Avenger. I said, I am a messenger from Netaru. Are you prepared for what I bear to you? They jested to the east. The shackles were released. I heard the moans of the beast. It was then that the granite was implanted with the positive chi energy. The slope became slanted on the angle equal to the distance that the sun's light must travel, unraveling the linens of 9 kings and 9 immaculate women. Hence the beginning of the obelisk, raising ritual, science of tachyon force, habitual but lost when the last piece of brick was tossed. The first Roman script embossed on the column base, the first emperor defiled and defaced the sarcophagus face. They couldn't imitate, so they had to replace benevolent Egyptian magic with a malevolent race.
Back here with you on the Global Reality, right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reese. We had some tech problems here, and that break, weird shit was firing off, and I don't know what was going on, so sorry about that, but everything seems to be working all right now. We're back here on the show. Thanks for joining us. My website where this broadcast originates from is www.theglobalreality.com. It's www.theglobalreality.com. And you can also join us in the chat room for the interactive part of the show. Interact with other people during the show there. Globalreality.com, theglobalreality.com chat room. Thanks to everybody hanging out in there tonight. We're going to be getting into the Lost Book of Enki in this chapter. I know roughly, as somebody said, I was on one page 154, one page 160. And all those seem to be pretty close. I don't really know. I'm reading some of this, and I feel like I've already read it. But I guess we'll just read it again here. For many orbits of the Earth, from the Earth were father and son absent. Oh, wait. Here we go. Now I figured out where we're at. Now this is the account of Sippar, the place of chariots in the Eden. And we've established that the Eden, E-D-I-N, is of course the Eden that we all are familiar with already. For many, this is the account of the Sippar, the place of the chariots in the Eden, and how the primitive workers were returned to Eden. So the primitive workers that were cast out of Eden were then returned to Eden. So this is where we're picking up tonight. For many circuits of the earth, from the earth were father and son absent. No plans were implemented on earth. And on Lamu, Mars, the Agigi workers were in turmoil. Enlil sent Anu secret words about his concern and beamed them from Nibiru to Anu. Enki and Marduk have gone to the moon. For countless orbits now, they are staying. What they are doing is a mystery. What they are scheming is not known. Marduk has abandoned the way station on Lamu on Mars, the Agigi or Agog. By dust storms, the way station has been affected. What damage there is to us is not known. The place of the chariots in the Eden must be established. Therefrom, the gold can be carried directly from Earth to Nibiru. No way station on Mars shall henceforth be needed. The plan of Ninurta it is. Great matters, great understanding in these matters he has. Let him establish a place of the chariots near the bad Tibiara establishment. Let Ninurta be its first commander. Anu gave much consideration to the words of Enlil and said to him, Enki and Marduk are returning to the earth. What have they found out about the moon? From the moon, Enki and Marduk departed and returned to earth. Of the conditions there, they gave an account. A way station is unfeasible now, they reported. Let the place of the chariots be built, Anu was saying. Let Marduk be its commander, Enki was saying to Anu. The task is set aside for Ninurta, Enlil was shouting angrily. For the Agigi, the Anunnaki workers, their command is no longer needed. Marduk has knowledge of these tasks. Of the gateway to heaven, let Marduk be in charge, so Enki did say to his father. Anu contemplated the matter with much concern. Rivalries have now affected the sons. With wisdom, Anu was endowed. With wisdom were his directions. The place of the chariots for the new ways the gold is to handle is designated. Let us henceforth come in the hands of a new generation place. Neither Enlil nor Enki, neither Ninurta nor Marduk shall be in command. Let the third generation take responsibility. Let Utu be the commander. Let the celestial place of the chariots be built. Let Sippar, the bird city, be its name. This was the word of Anu, unalterable. It was the word of a king. In the 81st Shar, or year of Nibiru, was the construction started. The plans of Enlil, it followed. Nibiru Ki was in the center. A navel of the earth by Enlil, it was designated. As on circles by their place and distances in the olden cities, they were located. Which is another reference to what we discussed earlier here in the book with the creation of the face on Mars. See, they like to, the interesting thing about, according to these texts, is that the Anunnaki had a, they had a hard-on for building stuff in similar locations as to how they built it on Nibiru. It's very premeditated. See, this is why you had the face on Mars on the 33-degree parallel on the place on Mars known as Cydonia, where pyramids were also found. And then, of course, in the area of ancient Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq, it was once firstly known as Cydonia as well, also located on the 33-degree parallel. So they really had a penchant for building things where you know, they liked building things that was familiar to them. They would build things, it seemed, that were very close and similar to how they had it on their own planet, so it would remind them of that. Like an arrow from the lower sea, They were arrayed pointing towards the mountains. A line on the twin peaks of Arata to the skies in the north reaching, he drew. Where the pointing arrow, the Arata line, intersected. The place for Sippar, the earth's place of the chariots, he marked out. To it, the arrow directly led from Nibiru Ki by an equal circle, precisely located. Ingenious was the plan. By its precision, all were made to wonder. In the 82nd Shar, the construction of Sippar was completed. To the Heru Utu of Enlil, the grandson, its command was given. An eagle's helmet was fashioned for him, and with eagle's wings he was decorated. It was the first chariot from Nibiru to come directly from Sippar, and Anu was traveling there as well. To view for himself the installations that he desired and to marvel at what was attained that he wanted. For the occasion, the Agigi by Marduk commanded from Mars to come to Earth. From the landing place, from the Abzu, the Anunnaki were assembled. There was backslapping and hailing, a feast and a celebration. For Anu Mana, Enlil's granddaughter, singing and dancing presented. With affection, Anu kissed her. Anunitu, Anu's beloved, he fondly called her, before departing. Anu assembled the heroes and the heroines. A new era has begun, he was saying to them. Supplied directly with the golden salvation, forthcoming is the end of our toil. Once enough gold for protecting has been piled in storage on Nibiru, the toil on Earth can be diminished. Heroes and heroines can return to Nibiru. Thus did Anu the king promise the assembled, and extend a great hope for the future to them. A few more shars of toil, and homeward bound they shall be. With much pomp did Anu to Nibiru soar back. Gold, pure gold, with him was carried. His new task, Utu, with cherish performed. Ninurta of Bad Tibara retained command. Marduk did not return to Lamu with his father. Over the lands he wished to roam in his skyship to comprehend the earth. So he just, you know, said, fuck it, I'm not going back. I'm going to fly around Earth and see if I can go set myself up as a god somewhere, you know. I'll find myself a fucking primitive people, give them technology, give them some little knowledge, have sex with their daughters, and set myself up as a god. Fuck, I got things to do. I'm out. Sounds like that's exactly what these guys did, right? Of the Agigi, some on Mars and some on Earth, Utu was made the commander of. Anu returned to Nibiru. He had great expectations of the leaders on Earth. With renewed vigor, they returned to their labor. Gold began to quickly amass, and thereby the Anunnaki believed they were going to be homeward bound quicker. It words it in a weird way, but that's what they're saying. That, alas, was not what came to pass. In the Abzu, relief, not continued toil, was the Anunnaki's expectation. Now that the Earthlings are proliferating, let them provide the labor. So were the Anunnaki and the Abzu saying. In the Eden, the tasks were greater. More abodes, more provisions were required. For primitive workers to the Abzu, they were confined. In the Eden, the heroes clamored. For 40 shars, only relief the Abzu provided. The heroes in the Eden shouted, our toil has increased beyond endurance. Let us have the workers too. While Enlil and Enki were debating the matter, Ninurta took the decision into his own hands. With 50 heroes, he led an expedition to the Abzu. They were armed with weapons. In the forests and the steppes of the Abzu, they chased the Earthlings. They captured them with nets, male and female, and brought them to the Eden. They made them do all manner of chores in the orchids in the cities and trained them. Enlil was angered by these doings. Enlil was enraged. My expelling of Adamu and Tiamat, Adam and Eve, you have overturned. So Enlil said to Ninurta, let the mutiny once in the Abzu occurring not in the Eden be repeated. With the earthlings in the Eden, the heroes have been calmed. A few more shars and it will no longer matter, Enlil said to Ninurta. Enlil was not appeased with the grumbling. He said, let it so be to his son. Let the gold pile up quickly. Let us all soon return to Nibiru. In the Eden, the Anunnaki were observing the Earthlings with admiration. They possessed intelligence, and of commands they had understanding. They took over all manner of chores, unclothed they were for the tasks that they were performing. Males with females among them were constantly mating, and quick were their proliferations. They're just doing work and fucking and doing work and fucking. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? That's what they get us to do. Go to work, fuck, go to work, fuck, go to work, fuck, go to work, fuck. No wonder that's all we do. In one shar, sometimes four, sometimes more, were their generations. As the earthlings grew in numbers, the workers that the Anunnaki had with the food, the Anunnaki were not satiated. In the cities and in the orchard, in the valleys and in the hills, the earthlings for food were constantly foraging. In those days, grains had not yet been brought forth. There was no ewe. A lamb had not been fashioned yet. So they're basically saying here that they were genetically responsible for creating, the animals that we use for food. That's an interesting thought. About these matters, Enlil was saying angry words to Enki. By your doings, confusion was created. You must devise a salvation. So that stops there. Now, this is the account of how civilized man was brought about. Now, this is going to get really juicy and interesting here, folks. How by a secret of Enki, Adapa and Titi in the Eden were brought forth. By the proliferation of the earthlings, Enki was pleased. He was also worried. The lot of the Anunnaki was greatly eased. Their discontent was diminished. By the proliferation, the Anunnaki shunned the toil. The workers were becoming serfs. For seven shards, the Anunnaki's lot was greatly eased. Diminished was their discontent. By the proliferation of the earthlings and how fast they were growing, the food was insufficient. In three more shards of fish and fowl, there was a shortage. What by itself grows, Anunnaki and earthlings did not satiate. In his heart, Enki was scheming a new undertaking to create a civilized mankind that he had conceived in his heart. Grains that are sown by them be cultivated. Ewes that become sheep, let them shepherd. In his heart, Enki was scheming a great undertaking and contemplating how to attain it. The primitive workers in the Abzu, he observed for this scheme. The earthlings in the Eden, in the cities, and in the orchards, he considered. What for the tasks made them suited? By what life essence has not been combined? The offspring of the earthlings, he observed. An alarming matter, he noticed. By their repeated copulations back toward their wild forebears, they were degraded. So they're de-evolving with each successive generation. Enki looked about the marshlands. He sailed on the rivers and observed. It was only him and his vizier who kept secrets. On the river's bank, bathing and frolicking earthlings, he noticed. two females among them were wild with beauty. Firm were their breasts. The sight that the phallus of Enki caused to water, their sight caused the phallus of Enki to water. That's some funny shit, dude. I told you guys. 5,000-year-old alien porn is just great. So he rolls up and sees these chicks and their tits out bathing in the water, and he just nuts himself right there. I mean, that's what it says. He saw him as like, just auto rubbed one out just right there, dude. Their sight caused the phallus of Enki to water. I'd like to hear Captain Kirk say that line. The sight caused the phallus of Enki to water. A burning desire he had. Shall I not kiss the young ones? Enki was asking. I will row the boat for you to kiss the young ones, Izumud said to Enki. Enki stepped onto dry land. A young one, Enki called to him, a tree from the fruit she offered him. Enki bent down to the young one and embraced her and kissed her lips. Lips, sweet were her lips, firm with ripeness were her breasts. Into her womb he poured his semen in a mating he knew her. Into her womb she took the holy semen. By the semen of the Lord Enki she was impregnated. The second young one called to him. She offered him berries from the field. Enki bent down and embraced her and kissed her on the lips. Sweet were her lips, firm with ripeness were her breasts. This guy didn't waste any time, man. He rolls up, sees him, kisses on the lips, and just proceeds to pouring the semen. Not squirting it or spurting, but just straight pouring it, as if Enki's just rolling around with like pitchers full of sperm, dude. Here, I'm going to pour this shit in you, girl. Bend over. I mean, that's fucking dirty. Into her womb, he poured his semen. In a mating, he knew her. Into her womb, she took the holy semen. By the semen of the Lord Enki, she was impregnated. Stay with the young ones and ascertain whether or not their pregnancies come about, Enki said to Vizier. Izumud sat down by the young ones. By the fourth count, their bulges appeared. By the tenth count, the ninth having been completed, the first young one squatted and gave birth. By her, a male child was born. The second young one squatted and gave birth. By her, a female child was born. At dawn and dusk, on the same day, the two were born. So one was born at dawn, the other at dusk. The gracious ones, dawn and dusk, thereafter in legends they were known. In the 93rd shard, the two that were fathered by Enki were born in the Eden. Word of the births Izumud quickly brought to Enki. By their births, Enki was ecstatic. Whoever has known such a thing? Between Anunnaki and Earthling, conception was attained. Civilized man I have brought into being. That's an important distinction, you know. That's where the whole thing with the Nephilim and stuff comes in. Anunnaki created man. They did genetic manipulation to create a worker race. Then after the worker race had been, basically multiplying itself, Enki steps in, gets two of these pregnant, and then that's where you had the first real crossbreeding come in. A lot of people forget that. According to the Anunnaki, we're a result of not just a genetic creation, but then a crossbreeding between them after the creation took place. A lot of times people leave that out. I think that's a very, very important thing to understand. It's not just that they created us through genetic manipulation. Once they created us, they had sex with us and made a crossbreed. civilized man I have brought into being. Enki gave instructions to Izimud, a secret my deed must remain. Let the newborns be suckled by their mothers. Therefore, after that, bring them into my household. Among the bulrushes and reed baskets I have found them. Thus to all you will say, by their mothers, the newborns, they were suckled and nurtured. To Enki's household in the Ridu, Izmid brought the children. Ninki took the foundling, found the foundlings took a liking to the foundlings as her own children and raised them. Adapa, the foundling, the boy she called, Titi, one with life, the girl she named. Unlike all other earthling children, the twosome were. Slower to grow up than earthlings they were, much quicker in understanding. They were endowed with intelligence. They were capable of speaking with words. Beautiful and pleasant was the girl, and her hands were greatly dexterous. Ninki, the spouse of Enki to Titi, took a liking. All manner of crafts to her she was teaching. To Adapa, Enki himself gave the teachings. How to keep records he was instructing him in. The achievements with pride Enki to Izimid was showing. A civilized man I have brought forth. A new kind of earthling from my seed has been created in my image and after my likeness. There you go. Man was created in God's image. There you go. From seed, they will grow food. From ewes and sheep, they will shepherd. Anunnaki and earthlings henceforth shall all be satiated. Enki sent word to Enlil, and from Nibiru to the Eridu, Enlil came. In the wilderness, a new kind of earthling has come forth to Enlil, Enki was saying. Quick of learning they are, knowledge and craftwork to them can be taught. Let us bring down seeds to be sown from Nibiru. Let us bring ewes that sheep can come from Nibiru to earth and deliver them. Let us the new breed of earthlings farming and shepherding teach. Let the Anunnaki and earthlings together satiated be, so Enki was saying to Enlil. Akin to us Anunnaki in many ways indeed they are, Enlil said to his brother. A wonder of wonders it is in the wilderness by themselves they have come about. Izimud was summoned. Among the bulrushes and the reed baskets I found them, he said. Enlil pondered the matter with graveness. With amazement, his head he shook. Indeed, a wonder of wonders it is. A new breed of earthling on earth has emerged. A civilized man has the earth itself brought forth. Farming and shepherding, crafts and tool-making he can be taught. Let us send word of the new breed to Anu, Enki said to Enlil. Of the new breed, word was beamed from earth to Anu on Nibiru. Let seeds that can be sown and sheep come to earth, he said. And so Enki did make a suggestion. And so Enki and Enlil to Anu made the suggestion. By civilized man, let Anunnaki and earthlings become satiated. Anu heard the words and was amazed by them. That by life essences one kind to another leads is not unheard of. To them he sent word back that on earth a civilized man from the Adamu so quickly appeared, that is unheard of. For sowing and husbanding, great numbers are needed. Perchance the beings are unable to proliferate. I'll just... Did I lose my spot? No, I didn't. It just scrolled down too far. Give me just a second. While the savants on Nibiru contemplated the matter, in Eridu, occurrences of import took place. Adapa, in a mating, Titi knew into her womb, he poured his semen. More semen pouring going on. More more crossbreeding going on. There was conception. There was birth giving to twins, two brothers. TT gave birth. Word of the birth to Anu was beamed to Nibiru. The twosome for conception are compatible. Proliferation by them can occur. Let on earth farming and shepherding begin. Let us all be satiated. So Engi and Enlil on Nibiru did say to Anu, let Titi in Eridu remain. The newborns are to be suckled and nurtured. Let Adapa, the earthling, to Nibiru be brought. Anu did declare his decision. So that's the end of the seventh tablet. We'll read the synopsis of the eighth tablet, and we'll get into that next time on the broadcast. This is the synopsis of the eighth tablet. Adapa's wide understanding amazes Nibiru's savants. On Anu's orders, Adapa is brought to Nibiru, an Earthling's first ever space journey. Enki reveals Adapa's parenting truth to Anu, and Enki justifies his deed by the need for more food. Adapa is sent back to start farming and shepherding. Enlil and Enki create crop seeds and sheep lines. Ninurta teaches Ka in crop cultivation. Marduk teaches Abael shepherding and tool making. Fighting over water, Kain strikes and kills Abel. Kain and Abel. Cain and Abel. K-A-I-N and A-B-A-E-L. Yeah. Ha ha. Cain and Abel. There you go. Cain is tried for murder, sentenced to exile. Adapa and Titi have other offspring who intermarry. On his deathbed, Adapa blesses his son Sati as his heir. A descendant, Enkamine, is taken from Marduk to Lamu. So, crazy, crazy stuff there. And, wow, getting more into the genetic manipulation. And apparently, you know, that's where we start to see the problem. The original, a lot of times historians and researchers don't specify this. They created the original workers to mine the gold. That was it. Enki found them beautiful and decided to do some crossbreeding, have a little, you know, have a little fun, get his dick wet, and boom, then you have, well, apparently have, you know, modern, what we call modern civilized human beings. I don't know what makes it so civilized, but, you know, that's what they say anyway. And apparently, as the story goes, you know, they ordered man to be wiped out, and, you know, it didn't happen. So it seems that we're just, you know, we're just here as a result of a bunch of these, some, you know, aliens from some other civilization just dicking around and are rolling dice, and now we're here. That's just great, isn't it? Well, hey, that's going to do it for the show tonight. Please support our work if you can. Thanks so much to everybody who has supported us and kept us on the air here, got the stream bill paid. But that doesn't leave us much in the, like, $7 in the account or whatever. So please donate if you can at the website, theglobalreality.com. We also have the new P.O. Box. You can send in checks and stuff. We absolutely can't use PayPal. But we've had that up for almost a week now, and we've gotten very little in PayPal, and we've got nothing in there yet. So only use that if you can't use PayPal, because that's our preferred method, because we have to pay the bills that way. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you, and we will see you next time on the broadcast. You guys have a great night. Take care.